Welcome to Flourishing Fully Radio, and welcome to all my listeners. Today we have a huge treat. Dr. Joseph Mercola and I will be having a dialogue that is so important to your health. Let me tell you first about Dr. Mercola in a nutshell. He's a champion. He's one of my heroes. He's a natural medicine advocate with the largest following on the internet at Mercola.com, which was begun almost 20 years ago, way back in 1997. His Facebook likes are huge, 1,250,000. That's big. He's an author, including The No-Grain Diet, The Great Bird Flu Hoax, and his most recent book, Effortless Healing. He touches the hearts, minds, and bodies of people all over the world with his informational products and his outstanding health products. Internationally, he empowers tens of millions of subscribers to take control of their health. In 2009, he was voted the ultimate wellness game changer by the Huffington Post, and he is featured recurrently on all the major networks. His influence is enormous. It's an honor and a privilege to welcome you, Dr. Mercola.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is really a topic that's near and dear to my heart. What we're going to talk about was the mitochondria, which are phenomenal. So really important to everyone's health that's listening to this.
Yes, I want to say how much I admire you just seizing the opportunity to talk about the mitochondria and all your work. I know it's a passion of yours, and it's a passion of mine, having recovered from a devastating mitochondrial dysfunction disorder. So I've been writing and teaching about it as well. And
great.
I'd like
glad you've improved, that's for sure.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to title this interview, It's All About the Mitochondria.
Great.
Okay, so let's start for our listeners. What is the mitochondrion, or what are the mitochondria?
Well, that's a great question, because most people may have heard about it in biology class, but they don't really understand what they are. They've been with us for quite a while. Basically, they are bacteria, primitive bacteria, that merged into certain types of cells, I don't know when, but ancient times, and I don't want to pin it on time, but it's a long time ago, and they served a function. See, at that point, it was pretty much a reducing atmosphere, and we didn't have oxygen in the environment, but then we had plants, and they were producing oxygen as a byproduct, there was a lot of oxygen, but the cells, the cellular structures that existed at that time, had no capacity to utilize oxygen. And what mitochondria do is essentially facilitate something called oxidative phosphorylation, which is a very efficient way to create energy. And that's their primary purpose, which is the production of ATP, adenosine triphosphate. It's the energy currency of the cell. And that's pretty much the limit of most people's knowledge and understanding of them. But they have other important functions. The other primary function would be to essentially be involved with something called apoptosis or autophagy, which is the recycling of damaged materials in the body, typically cells and cellular structures. And they're sort of like the garbage cleaning team. And if this process is impaired, you have very serious complications. It's like what you imagine in New York City. If the garbage people were on strike or didn't function, it'd be a mess not too long. That's exactly what happens here. And we'll discuss what catalyzes that. But they also serve a role that many people don't realize, and they're important signaling functions. They really are responsible for masterminding the energy production in the body. So where are they? They're in your cells. And I think we're going to talk about microbiome in a bit. The microbiome has gotten a lot of attention recently. And the conventional thought is that we have 10 trillion with a T of our own cells and 100 trillion of bacteria that reside primarily in our intestine. They're also on the skin and other places. But that understanding has actually changed recently, actually earlier this year. And the revision is that we have more cells. We have about 35 trillion, and that we don't have that many bacteria. There's about 35 trillion of those, too. And if you have a nice, healthy bowel movement, you'll have a lot less, of course, because that's where they most reside, in your intestine. So, but how many mitochondria do we have? That's a good question.
That is.
So since it's a passion of yours, too, I'll throw that question back to you.
Oh, well, since some cells can have, well, red blood cells have none.
Right, as do the skin cells.
Right, and so some cells have 100, and the more energetically demanding can have 100,000. So we would have to say that it could easily be that 35 trillion to another power or two.
Oh, no, it's actually, yes, at least two powers to three powers. So it's actually not a trillion, it's a quadrillion.
Quadrillion.
Which is the next number after trillion. Tri means three, quad is four, quintillion would be after quadrillion. So there's a lot. I mean, they outnumber us. I mean, we say bacteria outnumbers 10 to 1, but these mitochondria outnumber 500 to 1,000 to 1. And typically, the energetic cells, primarily the heart and the kidney, they have a few thousand. The only cells with 100,000 would be the reproductive cells. And
yes.
We don't have as many of those.
Yes.
So they're really important. My guess, and I don't know this, I haven't reviewed it, but my guess is that if all our mitochondria stopped functioning, my guess is we'd be dead in milliseconds. I mean, they're more important than breathing. I mean, when you breathe, you're breathing in oxygen. Well, what happens to that oxygen? It gets directed to the mitochondria. That's the primary reason and purpose for breathing, is to fuel these mitochondria, which passes these electrons from the oxygen all the way down to water in a very complex process in the inner membrane of the mitochondria and on the electron transport chains that ultimately produces ATP through a very sophisticated mechanism. It's really quite fascinating, which we don't have time to go into all the details, but it's like an amazing detective story to understand how this process works. I mean, it's just captivating.
Captivating and a very delicate balance. It's the control mechanisms, the signaling mechanisms are so sensitive and exquisite that really it's a miracle of life.
Well, you know, so that's a good place to start. But I think what I need to interject here is, why the heck did I become interested in mitochondria?
I was going to ask you that.
What's going on here? Why am I just going crazy or something? So I'll tell you the story because it's really interesting. Now, I'm writing a new book. This new book will be the most significant game changer I ever contributed, probably my major legacy that I'll leave behind. It's going to be a game changer, at least, I hope, 10 times to 100 times more popular than the Atkins book. Because the information it has in there is literally life-saving for the vast majority of people listening. And because these affect almost every disease. But how did I become interested in it? Well, my mentor is Dr. Ron Rosedale. He's a physician, an MD. And I first heard him 21 years ago in a small meeting in Chicago. And he helped me understand the importance of insulin. And insulin is clearly one of the important signaling molecules for mitochondria. So he helped me understand that. And then about 5 to 7 years ago, he helped me understand the next part of the equation, which was mTOR. Are you familiar with mTOR?
I have to confess I'm not.
Okay, don't be embarrassed or sad, because that's exactly the response to about 99% of physicians. So, and it was not taught when most physicians went to medical school. It was not even discovered until about maybe 15 years ago. And maybe 20 at the most, but I mean, it's relatively recent. It certainly wasn't known when I went to medical school, so, you know, it's new. And it's what is mTOR? It's short for mammalian target of rapamycin, a very primitive ancient pathway that's a nutrient signaling pathway that is the second part of the equation, because insulin and its collaborator, leptin, along with mTOR, are probably the two most important biochemical pathways in your body. And if you optimize those pathways, it's like, whatever you do to optimize them, and if they're optimized, you will get healthy. It's certainly possible not to get healthy, but it's really the most potent physical thing you can do to improve your health. So, and it primarily is a sensor for protein. It's designed to improve and increase muscle cells and strength and repair. But most of the time, it just needs to be on for a partial time of the day, not continuously as most people do. And what stimulates it is excessive protein. We'll talk a little bit about that down the road. But so it was Rosedale who helped me understand both of those. Now, I've known about the mTOR for maybe 5 or 7 years, but it didn't kick in until I encountered two events. And I'd like to share those events with you, because I know this is primarily an autism support group, but, you know, cancer is another big issue. It's a major killer of people. There's no question. It's still following behind a heart disease, but it probably will pass heart disease at some point. And all of us know someone who's been affected or died of cancer. I mean, that's just no question. So I watched a movie, and I encourage everyone to watch this movie. It's called The Fault in Our Stars. Have you seen that?
No, I have not. The Fault of Our Stars.
But put a red giant warning next to that marker or note. You cannot, and I repeat, cannot watch this movie without a full box of Kleenex.
Yes.
It is the most emotionally moving film I've ever watched, and is my all-time favorite film. because I knew after watching this that I could make a difference in this. That 1,600 people every day do not have to die in the U.S. alone, 20,000 worldwide. So I was motivated. Now, I moved to Florida a few years ago, and I'm a big believer in movement, not just exercise. So as part of that, I walk on the beach for 2 hours a day, get some sun exposure and move, and I also read so I can multitask. And I read about 150 books a year. And last year, the best book I ever read was the follow-up of those two previous exposures, Dr. Rosedale and the movie, the film, was the book Tripping Over the Truth by Travis Christofferson. If you have cancer, anyone you know has cancer, it's a must-read book because it will really go into much greater detail and expose the whole fraud of the genetic theory or the nuclear genetic theory of cancer, which is just wrong because cancer is caused by mitochondrial dysfunction.
Yes.
This was learned for the most part, and we'll talk about what caused mitochondrial dysfunction, but this was figured out. Mitochondria weren't discovered at the time, but Warburg figured out the physiology of it, and he got a Nobel Prize for it almost 80 years ago. And he's had disciples since then. Warburg was an MD, PhD, the most brilliant biochemist of the 20th century, a genius, literally. And he had disciples. No one believed him. They thought he was a crackpot, kind of like me. And he has disciples of Pete Peterson, who was a PhD over Johns Hopkins, and he picked up the research for about 20 years. And then Tom Seyfried followed after him. He's a professor at Boston College. So he wrote on this, and basically the work is being done. And if you read the book, it goes into the understanding how the belief that cancer is a cause by damage to the nucleus and the genes in the nucleus is flawed, because what Seyfried did is put together this research. He actually didn't do it, but he compiled it, that showed that when you take the nucleus from a cell that has cancer and implant that into a normal cell, you would expect that normal cell to become cancerous, right?
Yes.
If that theory is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is not what happens. Amazingly, those deformed genes that have been attributed and thought to believe to be the cause of the cancer transform back to normal.
Awesome.
Unbelievable. So what's the converse of that? You take a cell, that same cell that has cancer, remove the nucleus, but put in a normal, healthy nucleus. What happens? You would think that cell, if the theory was correct, that cell would turn normal. No, that nucleus develops cancer. Why? Because the mitochondria signal to the nucleus and causes all the damage. All this genetic damage in nucleus is a downstream secondary effect from the primary foundational issue, which is mitochondrial dysfunction and disorder. And there's a lot of other findings to support that, but essentially that's a summary. So that got me on this, and then I realized, oh my God, it all started to fly together. And I saw the big picture, and I've been motivated like no other motivation I've ever had in my life to share this with people. I mean, this is like my life mission now, is to help people understand it, but not only understand it, but to provide a format and a framework to implement strategies, because there's a lot of people who understand some part of it, but no one has put this all together, because it's a giant 10,000 piece puzzle piece. And there's a lot of people who have some good concepts about it, but no one's put it all together. So that's what I'm attempting to do. I've been working on this for the last 6 months, and I hope to have the book published next year, which will give people a working manual on how to implement this strategy.
Do you have a
so
name for
that? That's the background. Well, I like your name. It's all about the mitochondria. That truly is what this is. But, you know, from a marketing perspective, you have to do something different. So why people get sick and how to fix it is another one. But I haven't decided on a name yet. You know, we're going to call this treatment mitochondrial metabolic therapy, or MMT for short. But there's a lot. I mean, there's some important basic principles, but the fine-tuning, the details are critical to successfully implementing this. And a lot of it's still evolving. We don't know yet, but we've got a good idea of how to implement this. And it literally will change your life once you implement this program. No question about it.
The wonderful thing is that the mitochondria are so responsive to support.
Oh, yes. If you know what you're doing.
Yes.
Virtually every conventional physician is, I would say 99% of them or more are clueless or ignorant of how to optimize mitochondrial function.
That's right. You never go in and have anyone say to you, how are your mitochondria doing today?
No, they don't know. They will know. Next generation of physicians get this. Maybe the people who are just applying to medical school now or down the road or they're in grade school, they'll figure it out. They'll know, because this will become the goal is to educate the population, which is what I've done on this newsletter for all these topics. And once the people get it, there's this nucleus of individuals who understand this and start applying it and seeing their lives turn around. It spreads like viral nucleus. This is the way Atkins did. Everyone hated Atkins. They thought he was nuts. But it went viral because it worked. Lots of problems with Atkins' approach. Lots of problems. This is not Atkins at all, any way, shape, or form. This is like almost, I mean, there's some similarities and it's high fat, but almost in low carbs, but it's, you know, everything else is pretty much different.
Well, you know, I believe I've heard you say that the truth is in three steps, ridicule, and then opposition, and then widely acceptance. So
yeah, that's what we'll be with this. There's no question we'll be ridiculed. But you know what? I'm used to it.
Well,
it
you're
off like, I don't know if you've ever seen a duck, but they're a magnificent creature. And literally, if you watch them in the rain, the water literally rolls off their back. It does not stick. And I've started to kind of develop a duck defense. You know, just they can say anything they want. It doesn't bother me.
Well, you're a pioneer and a futurist, and that's what it takes.
Yes, it is important element of successfully communicating. There's no question. Otherwise, if you let it get to you, just get depressed and suicidal, which is not good.
Okay. Well, you've got a mission. We both have a mission. So, okay. Where do you want to proceed to?
Well, so my initial passion was cancer. And I think that's what we're going to focus on initially, because I said 1,600 people are dying today. This is like, if you go into an emergency room after a catastrophe, like a terrorist attack or something, they have to do something called triage. And that's what we're in now, because these people are dying. This mitochondrial optimization is useful for almost every disease. So what are those diseases? I mean, non-controversial, unequivocal data on this. They are the solution, the cure for type 2, not type 1, type 2 diabetes, although it will help autoimmune diseases, of which type 1 is an example, so MS and others. Neurodegenerative diseases, Alzheimer's, which you have an epidemic, Parkinson, ALS, so it definitely is useful for that. Obesity, I think, well, let me just finish these and I'll go back to my personal anecdotal experience with this, but obesity is the solution because it addresses the fundamental foundational molecular biological pathways that are disturbed. So obesity, overweight, seizure disorder, no question. I mean, this has been used for coming up on 100 years successfully for intractable seizures. There's no question about it. Problem is, most people don't know how to successfully implement it. And that's where I'm going to use my 3 decades of passionate about nutrition to understand importance of eating real food, food quality, and a lot of other important subtle details to how to optimize this effectively. Because if you just know the macronutrient ratios, it's not going to work. There's a lot of important subtleties that are important. So it affects all these diseases, and heart disease. I don't know if I forgot to mention heart disease. So, you know, it's about 80-90% of the population. So it's not everyone, but it's certainly most. And in all those other diseases, this will be helpful. Now, you do this ideal diet. See, the best, most ideal implementation of mitochondrial metabolic therapy. It'll help most people, but certainly not everyone, because there's some other tweaks you do in there. We'll talk about that in a moment. So this is, you know, it'll even help genetic mitochondrial disorders, but those are a different issue, and thankfully, they are a really small minority of the diseases. It's far less than 1%. So this has not been a passion of mine, and it really, there's not enough time to study them in great detail, because it's a whole subspecialty to understand what they are, how to diagnose them and how to treat them, what the defect is. But there's a lot of similarities in the treatment approaches. So, basically almost all of us, anyone listening to this, your friends, your relatives, you can almost be guaranteed they have mitochondrial dysfunction. That's the key. It's a mitochondrial dysfunction. They're not working optimally. Oh, I forgot the most important one, which almost everyone listening to this because has this problem, that we are all slowly dying, right?
Aging.
There's no, in fact, I'm one of the keynote speakers in San Diego in, I think, August. There's a collaboration of a bunch of experts are getting there, and we're going to be talking about this is what I'm going to be sharing. So all about anti-aging. So this is the most profoundly effective intervention you can do to slow down the aging process. Nothing is more potent, period. At least that's my impression. I'm certainly biased, but that's my belief.
I think anybody with any knowledge would agree with you. That's the mitochondrial theory of aging.
Yeah, now, that's a good question. But it's actually, that original theory is not necessarily true.
Uh-huh.
Because there's been some refinements of it. And understanding the refinements helps us understand how what the clinical implementation of this involves. So that's the key. So I'm trying to pull up my PowerPoint that reminds me of some of the things. But let's talk about some of the other diseases that, but variables, okay? And what causes mitochondrial dysfunction? Because I think that really is the key.
Okay.
You know, what causes mitochondrial dysfunction, right?
Yes.
People want to know that. So, I mean, I would want to know that. So there's a lot of things, and it's just impossible to discuss these in detail. But for the most part, I discuss most of these in my book, Effortless Healing. But emotional trauma, toxins and heavy metals, food allergies, food sensitivities, movement deficiency, not enough of the right movements or exercise, lack of sleep, nutrient microbiome imbalances, and EMF exposures. So those can independently, each one of those are in concert and synergy, can contribute to mitochondrial dysfunction.
Can I interrupt you and ask you about stealth bacteria, stealth organisms?
Yes,
like Lyme.
Like Lyme, yeah. Actually, I had a personal experience with Lyme and was diagnosed with it by some energetic testing. So, and I was following pretty much close to a perfect diet, and it still caused some problems for me that I had to reconcile. So, yeah, that would be a good example. But it was other things. I had a lot of these issues. I had food allergies I was not aware of, toxins that were still there, emotional traumas. I was sleeping great but didn't have really any nutrient or microbiome imbalances. It was pretty good. But, you know, there's simple treatments for no EMF exposure. But even if you only have a few of these, it can knock you out. So it's a problem. So what is the reason that I believe that most people suffer? What is the major variable that contributes to mitochondrial dysfunction? This is the question, right?
Yes.
So as I mentioned, oxygen normally gets those electrons, passes its electrons to water, actually peroxide, and then which goes to water. And that works about 95% to 99.5% of the time. The other times, it actually generates something called reactive oxygen species, and occurs within the inner mitochondrial cell membrane. Oxygen initially then, in those cases, goes to superoxide, which is the most common reactive oxygen species. That gets neutralized by SOD to peroxide. And here's a fork in the road. That peroxide can then, with glutathione's help, can be converted to water, and then it's no problem. That's an innocuous end product. Or it can be converted to hydroxyl free radical. And that is the most biologically destructive and damaging free radical known to man. And if it's in the inner mitochondrial membrane, it decimates the mitochondrial DNA and the membranes and the proteins there. So it just destroys them. It's just horrible free radical. So there are two variables, it's important to know, that can limit the production of these free radicals. I'll bet you'd like to know what they are.
Oh, the audience is waiting.
Okay, well, the first one is a simple one that everyone needs to check, or most everyone who's not a menstruating woman. If you're not a menstruating woman or a child, then you don't have to, you can ignore this. But almost everyone else has excessive iron, and that's defined by a serum ferritin level of between somewhere the same, the ideal range of vitamin D, which is 40 to 60 nanograms, maybe 60 to 80, but it's 40 to 60 for sure. And when your iron level exceeds that, as determined by the ferritin level, you will catalyze by something called the Fenton reaction, the conversion of peroxide to hydroxyl free radical, massively, no matter what you're using for fuel. So that you got to check. That's a simple thing everyone can do. And if your ferritin level is elevated, the way to treat it is to get a therapeutic phlebotomy and just keep on removing your blood, because that's where most of the iron is, until your ferritin level comes down into that range. Simple to do, may take months to sometimes, if it's really high, years, but it will save your life. It will add decades to your life. So what's the way, if your ferritin's normal, how do you do this? You have to give your body clean fuel. 95% of the fuel in our body is fat. Less than 5% is carb. So the key is to burn fat. Why? Because that's what we're designed to do. And when you don't, and when you start burning carbohydrate or glucose for fuel, you generate significantly more reactive oxygen species. Instead of 0.5%, you're up to the full 5%, 10 times more, maybe, you know, depending on the circumstances. So it's definitely a problem. And that is the key that virtually no one understands at a molecular biological level how this works. You've got to eat clean fuel that doesn't have pollution of reactive oxygen species. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. And by clean food, you mean organic?
Fuel. There's only two fuels your body has. It's actually three, but the two primary ones are fat and carbs. So the clean fuel is fat. The dirty fuel is carbs.
Okay.
The subset of fats is ketones, which is even cleaner. That's the best. And ultimately, you want to catalyze the pathways that produce ketones, because when you do that, your engine is tuned.
Yes.
Oh, they are wonderful. They're not only signaling molecules, but they are clean sources of fuel. They're water soluble. They don't require carry to get into the mitochondria like the fats do, which require L-carnitine. So it's a beautiful thing. So how do you do this? The key is to use two therapies. One is to control your macronutrient ratio. And that is, this is a high-fat diet. It's high-fat. But a high-fat diet can kill you if you do it right. And if you tell someone you're going to do, almost anyone you're doing a high-fat diet, they will think you have gone bananas and want to commit you to the funny farm. Because there's so much information that supports that that's a dangerous, toxic strategy. And for the way these studies were done that claimed that, it was true because they used the wrong fats. That's how we got into the low-fat mess, because they were using terrible fats to do these studies. And it did cause loads of disease. It caused a heart disease epidemic in the first half of the 20th century, no question. But we were designed to eat high-quality fats. And then, so that's about 75% of your diet. Maybe 10% is protein. And here's the key. Remember, we want to optimize mTOR, mammalian target of rapamycin. And the way you do that is to limit your protein intake. Do not exceed 1 gram per kilogram, not of total body mass, but of lean body mass. So it would be very unusual for someone listening to this to be under 10%. I mean, it happens. I'm about 9%. But most people are closer to 20%. So if you weigh 200 pounds and you were 20% fat, and that's still pretty good for a lot of people, that would be 40 pounds. So your lean body mass would be 140. And then you just have to do the conversion divided by 2.2 to kilograms. And what does that number turn out to be? That's like 40 to 60 to 70 at the most for most people, grams. Now that's not 40 to 70 grams of chicken or beef. That's protein within the food that you're eating. And there's very effective nutrient trackers that will tell you how much protein is in there, how many grams of protein to the tenth of a gram. So you can really easily monitor this. And you have to monitor it. It's like impossible to figure this out with some type of nutrient tracker. So that is the key. So and then you have about 15% of the rest of the calories would be carbs, 2/3 of those of fiber, primarily from vegetables, and then 1/3 would be what we call non-fiber carbs, or some people call them net carbs. And that's typically you try to keep under 50 grams. Now, if you're really sick, seriously, like pre-terminal, you might have to keep that 20 grams. But for most people, 50 grams, if you're healthy and you're an athlete, you can maybe go up to 100. And there's biofeedback monitoring systems like measuring your glucose that will tell you how, you know, when you start to exceed the amount of healthy carbs or non-fiber carbs. So one of the ways to do that is to measure blood sugar. Easy to do. Now, are you familiar with measuring blood sugar as a way to optimize mitochondrial dysfunction?
No, but it certainly makes sense.
Okay. So that's the general component. Now, the other component, I mean, you eat food within that category, and the details are a bit complex, and it requires probably more time than you have to go in today. That's why I'm writing this book, because I'm beta testing myself. Oh, I forgot to go back. Let's go back to how I said this is useful for obesity. I started this program like in December, I think December, and for some challenges I was experiencing, and just to try to implement it, because I was understanding this was the way to treat cancer, and I wanted to know what it felt like. So I weighed about 185 pounds. I dropped almost 20 pounds.
Wow.
within like a month or 6 weeks. And I was eating over 3,000 calories a day.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a calorie-restricted diet, because essentially fat is a free ride. I was eating 3,000 calories and I lost 20 pounds. I lost 3 inches from my waist. I was 35. I'm down to 31.5 now, and 9% body fat. So you will lose weight. Most of that weight is fat, visceral fat, which is not good for you. So, and you know, how many people, I mean, this is massive. If people understood this, I mean, the industries, this is a multi-billion dollar industry around this, and they don't understand how to do it. Because when you implement it, as I'm describing, you're going to activate, you're going to inhibit mTOR, you're going to inhibit insulin and leptin, and those signaling pathways are responsible for a number of important physiological functions, which we mentioned earlier. Autophagy, and when it comes to mitochondria, it's called mitophagy, mitochondrial autophagy. So when those pathways are inhibited, you increase it, which is good.
Yes.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also increase the numbers, and that's a process called mitochondrial biogenesis. So you rapidly increase them. So let's get back to how to do this. We discussed the macronutrient ratios. The next portion of the other phase of this is the timing of your food.
Perfect.
So when do you eat? There's a lot of buzz about fasting and a lot of confusion about it. I can't tell you that most people are, in fact, there's an article on our website today about fasting, and almost everyone is commenting and doesn't understand it. Because even some of the experts, like Dr. Seyfried, is encouraging and recommending water fasting, which I strongly disagree with. So there is an optimal time to fast, and if you exceed that time, you're going to cause damage. So the fasting is in itself a potent indicator of those same pathways I just mentioned. It'll increase mitochondrial biogenesis and mitophagy. So how long do you fast? Normally, it's about 12 to 18 hours. But how do you know if it's 12 or how do you know if it's 18? Would you like to know?
Yes.
You would?
Of course.
All right. Well, you monitor your blood sugar. Remember, this is customized for the person. So there is a really cool device. It costs, people have to budget for it. It is kind of pricey, but you can get it on Amazon, $7. It's called the Bear Contour, C-O-N-T-O-U-R. Not the Contour Next, just a simple plain Jane Bear Contour. And the strips are 25 cents. So you can test yourself 4 or 6 times a day for, under $2, which is pretty cool.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. So, if it comes too pricey, you have a hard time tricking yourself. Like to measure ketones, it's like $4 for most people. You can get under $2, but it's kind of hard to find. And so most people don't do it because it's way too pricey. So for 25 cents, you're open to it. So what you do is you measure your blood sugar when you get up, and you want it as low as possible. I've been able to train my body to get it below 60. So most of my time, I feel good if I can get below 60, like in the 55, 57, somewhere around there. I even had it down to 53. Now, this is not a type 1 diabetic. So, you can get that low if you inject insulin, which would be dangerous. But, this is someone who's normal. So it's going to be hard for most people to do unless they're optimized. But you want to get as low as possible. What happens when you go beyond the ideal fast time is the key. Your body will sense that the sugar is too low. It doesn't have the ability to provide fuel as a substrate for your cells. So it's going to provide sugar. And the way it does that is by breaking down lean muscle mass, a process called metabolism, which you do not want to do. The last thing you want to do is lose your muscle mass. So when your blood sugars, ultimately you measure a few times, maybe even every 15 to 30 minutes initially, to see when it starts to come back up. When it starts to come back up, time to eat.
Got it.
Isn't that cool?
Very cool.
And I figured it out myself. It's not written anywhere. It's just like part of my strategy to understand this. So that is how long you fast for. And I think doing anything else is a challenge. So let's look at the cow. The cow, you would think, is eating 100% carb diet, right? Most people would believe that?
Most people believe that.
Yeah, well, it's not true. The cow is essentially eating 100% fat diet. You're going to probably say, what? Right?
Yes.
Well, the cow eats grass or grass-like substances, essentially non-digestible fibers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's fiber. 100% fiber diet is digested, but not by the cow directly, only indirectly through its compatriots that live in the intestine, the bacteria. And it converts those undigestible fibers into short-chain fatty acids like acetate, propionate, and butyrate. And those are really small fat molecules that the liver just sucks up and goes quickly to ketone. Ketones, as I mentioned, are made the liver burn far cleaner, and they have far less reactive oxygen species, and they make your brain work great. One of the most important observations of people on this program is that the mental clarity improves dramatically, absolutely. It's astonishing how much better they're able to think. It's just outrageously. So that leaves, so we've got, it addresses the non-fiber carbs and addresses the protein. We talked about the content. At least 75% of the diet, 75%. If you don't get this right, you are guaranteed to fail, miserably. So what was the problem? Problem is most fats are highly refined and processed. 1900, we had very little, almost none, less than a pound a year for the average person, right? 100, less than a pound. 2000, 75 pounds a year, primarily omega-6 oils. Totally destroys the omega-6 to 3 ratio, which is another powerful signaling mechanism. It incorporates these polyunsaturated fats, primarily omega-6, into your cell membranes, makes them predisposed to oxidation and damage, and just a nightmare. So if any one of your you want to have the cleanest fat possible, and that is usually from the whole seed. So if anyone listening to this has flaxseed, you don't have flaxseed at home, do you?
Always. Oil? Yes, I do.
Okay, so you have to promise me, when we finish this presentation, that you will think about this and find a relative or a neighbor that you really don't like and give that to them. You can guarantee it is highly damaged. It should not be consumed by humans. Okay?
All right.
Away. So you want it. Now, flax seeds, however, organic flax seeds, whole, unhulled, that you grind in a coffee grinder immediately before you use are great. Now, you don't need a lot, maybe a tablespoon a day.
Can I interrupt you a second?
Sure.
I'm blocking on the name, but there's a protocol of cottage cheese and flaxseed oil.
Oh, yes, the Budwig protocol. dairy.
The Budwig, yes, the Budwig.
Yeah, which I don't recommend because it has cottage cheese, and there's a lot of problems with dairy. Primarily the protein in there, excessive protein, it's got sugar, it's got definitely non-fiber carbs in there. So I don't recommend it. You can achieve the benefits of that with far better protocols. I mean, she was ancient. She passed away a long time ago. She didn't have access to the new research that we're doing about molecular biology. Would not recommend it in any way, shape, or form. What I'm putting together is far superior.
Okay, let's proceed.
And we've got the science to back it. It's not like idle speculation.
Right.
So, what are other types of the fats? Probably one of the best is avocados. So you can have 2-3 a day. I mean, there are many days where I have 3 avocados. And that becomes pricey for many people. So you want to know a strategy how to lower the cost?
Yes.
You would?
Of course.
All right. Well, you know, these are loss leaders many times. So that many, regularly the grocery store will put them on sale, right?
Yes.
When they're on sale, you buy 30, 40, 50, 60 of them. As long as they're rock hard green, they will last for 2 to 3 weeks in your refrigerator. And then you have to take them out about 2 or 3 days before you're going to eat them. So they're right. That'll save you hundreds of dollars a year easily.
Right.
So that's a nice little thing. Because I'm frugal. I don't want people paying more than they have to.
Absolutely.
Because it's tough enough, to do this stuff. And most people are economically impaired, so that's a challenge. So,
how about coconut oil?
Coconut oil is excellent. MCT oil is a derivative of that. It's more refined. It's really a refined oil. It's really the only exception I would make because refined oils, and I'm still in my process of evaluating that, but there are a lot of products out there like using exogenous ketones, just the ketones themselves, like beta-hydroxybutyrate, acetoacetate, getting mineral salts of them or esters and to increase that. But the simpler, more nutritional, and natural way is to use MCT oil. Which is great. It comes in two forms, primarily in oil, which is less expensive, and it comes as a powder. I would definitely caution anyone not to use more than a tablespoon because beyond that dose, for most people, they're going to have pretty serious diet problems with loose stools. So you can increase over time. I'm up to about 6 tablespoons a day. And it's particularly useful in the transition phase when you feel, because you don't convert to burning fat right away. It takes weeks, sometimes months. And in that conversion process, you're short on energy and fuel because you're not being able to make these ketones. So you can use the MCT oil in your coffee or tea. It's clear, it's colorless, it has essentially no taste, unlike coconut oil. And it will definitely give you a source of fuel. And if you have a really good microbiome and have been eating lots of fiber, you can probably go up more. But if you don't, you have a typical diet, it will definitely cause a problem.
Okay.
So MCT oils, coconut oil, olives. And I do seeds. I do a lot of seeds. Well, it's a significant portion, but it's about a tablespoon of each of these, maybe 2 tablespoons, like black sesame, black cumin, chia, flaxseed, I already mentioned, pumpkin seed, hemp, and psyllium, which is essentially all fiber product. There's no carbs in there at all that are non-fiber. So that's an easy way to upregulate your microbiome and get nice fluffy stools that are resistant to MCT oil diarrhea. So you use a lot of psyllium, organic psyllium. It has to be organic. It can't be Metamucil. And that would be, I use about 4 tablespoons a day of that.
What about exercise?
Exercise is key. That's another one that is absolutely important. You just have to be careful not overdoing it, depending on what disease process you're treating. But if you're really hyper-disciplined and overcommitted, you can make the mistakes I did and over-exercise and ruin yourself.
Before we go on to exercise, I know I brought it up, but I wanted one of us to talk about what happens to the mitochondria if you eat late at night.
That's another component. Thank you for mentioning that. It's a very important component. You do not want to eat late at night. And if you go to the comment page on my website in this article, people just don't get it, even though I've screamed at them for a long time. What happened is you're going to generate fuel. You're going to generate ATP that your body cannot use. So there's a backup in the whole system, and you radically increase the production of reactive oxygen species.
Exactly.
That is just nuts. So when you do intermittent fasting, well, the way I do it is at least 3 hours, sometimes 4, 5, or 6 hours before you go to bed is your last meal and last food. That's it. You are basically big time fasting when you go to sleep. So you're going to minimize your production. Now, if you're healthy and you're an athlete, you can modify that some way. But for most people, that's going to be key. So
right.
That's why I believe in, eating after 6 is like not a good idea.
So a lot of people
ruins your social life.
Ruins your social. That's exactly where I was going.
Yeah. It does. So, but you're healthy. You're creating a trend. You're an innovator. You're on the leading edge, and you're helping educate people about this. They're going to be curious as to why you're doing this. And you can still join them. You just don't eat hardly anything. Maybe just have water or something. I mean, just engage with them on a social level.
Unfortunately, you can't drink the water at a restaurant.
Yeah, you bring your own. Or you order a bottle of water like Perrier or something else. So. So you had one of these questions here, which was really pretty interesting. Where is it? What is your favorite mitochondrial finding, new fact or issue? And I usually do this at the beginning. I was saving it for this question, and I didn't want to skip over it. There's some really intriguing things that virtually no one knows. Let's talk about the first one. I learned this as I was studying the science of this. You know, I've read hundreds of the hardcore scientific journal articles to figure this out. And you know how many people are taking statin drugs in the U.S.?
For sure. Major.
You know how many?
I don't know the number, but it's staggering.
Yeah, it's over 25% of adults over 40, we're going to one-third. One in three adults over 40 in the U.S. are on these statin drugs. So what do? They obviously lower their cholesterol. You know how they lower it? It's okay, you don't have to know. They inhibit an enzyme called HMG, coenzyme A reductase.
Okay.
Major, major pathway. That pathway also is responsible for making, you probably know, coenzyme Q10.
Yes.
So you have to take it if you're on it. But what virtually no one understands this. That enzyme is also responsible for making ketones.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot make ketones if you're taking a statin. And one-third of adults over 40 are doing that.
And that's why they're all, that contributes to their weight gain.
That's a big part of it, but there's a lot of other reasons too. Mm-hmm. So another interesting finding is that gram per gram, and unless you read Nick Lane's book, Power, Sex, and Suicide, he's a molecular biologist out in England, great book about mitochondria. And he discusses it in this book, where he explains and goes through the science and the numbers so you can confirm it. I mean, he's got all the numbers there. I'm not going to go through them now. But gram per gram, we make 10,000 times more energy than the sun.
Yes, I've read that.
Yeah, so he's the guy that really popularized it. So the other component is, well, okay, energy in the form of ATP. How much ATP does the average person make a day? Here's the other thing that people don't know. So then they'll leave it, because those are three facts. That's good. How much, because Dr. Rosedale didn't know the answer to this one. You know, ATP is really small. It's just a few molecules, right?
Yes.
So how much do we make a day? Do we make a teaspoon, an ounce, a pint? How much?
I don't know.
Okay, this will shock you. Your weight in pounds a day.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you're making a lot. That's why if you stop the production, you're dead in milliseconds, because it powers just about every pathway in your body. Not everyone, but just about. So other problems that we encounter commonly are the use of GMOs, and the problem with GMOs is 85% of them are engineered to allow the application of Roundup. And Roundup, of course, has two components. One is the glyphosate, which is toxic in and of itself, but when it's combined with surfactants, it's 100 to 1,000 times more toxic, and they never tell you about that. Decimates your microbiome. Absolutely causes leaky gut, and it's something you need to avoid. So you have to eat organic. Cannot be exposing yourself to Roundup.
And please, Dr. Mercola, tell people that it's way more expensive to have the effects and the illness of glyphosate exposure than to eat organic.
Right. A lot of people complain about that, but you just go to my site, mercola.com, and we've got, and type this in the, I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the site. It's been there for 20 years. We've got lots of information, literally thousands and thousands, top of tens of, even hundreds of thousands of articles. So you type in the question. Just type a question in the search engine, top of every page. And you say, well, how do I eat inexpensively? How do I eat organic inexpensively? We've got lots of articles with specific details and strategies on how to do that. So you, even if you know how knowledgeable, you can eat at the same cost, if not lower. But even if you're paying 2-3 times as much, you could justify in the long run because you're not going to have the downstream complications from exposing yourself to those chemicals.
That's right. That's right. And the glyphosates are surfactants are chelators, which
They're mineral chelators, primarily manganese is the big one. Zinc is another one. So these minerals are vital catalysts for biological pathways. And when you deprive your body of them, you shut down certain important reactions.
What, besides your diet, which you've so exquisitely refined, what are the supplements that you take to support your mitochondria?
Oh, that's a great question. And first, before I answer that, I want to emphasize that we will have a whole line of mitochondrial supplements, but none of them, and let me emphasize, none of them are going to be useful unless you apply the diet. Supplements are not magic pills. they're only going to be effective if you implement the strategies I just reviewed. It's a supplement. It's an addition to the dietary intervention, not a replacement of. So you are wasting your money, time, effort, and energy if you try a supplement that works. Probably the most useful one we're making are these mitochondrial bars that are made with MCT powder and coconut powder so they don't melt and, you know, ruin things. And they taste really good, and they have seeds like the black sesame and black cumin. And pretty much the ideal ratio I just described, so that you can travel and not be an oddball. You know, you can have a healthy bar. So these bars do not exist anywhere. So that's a food, really a food, which, you know, I like to keep things focused on food. But with respect to supplements, I take a lot. Magnesium is a very important one. Coenzyme Q10, I take ubiquinol, which is the reduced version. L-carnitine and acetyl L-carnitine. They're different. They're similar, but different ones. The L-carnitine transports the fatty acids across the mitochondrial cell membrane, and the L-acetyl-carnitine is important for the formation of cardiolipin, which is a primary lipid in the inner mitochondrial membrane. And then I take resveratrol, which I wasn't a big fan of, but I am now, because it's an exercise mimic. It really is an important stimulator of mitochondrial biogenesis. Curcumin, D-ribose. D-ribose, I take it every meal.
How about PQQ?
Oh, PQQ for sure. I take 10 milligrams twice a day on that. They'll probably be in our bars. PQQ, really important one. But a lot of these nutrients you should not be taking every day. So, like, a good strategy that I just learned and really appreciated is, like, 5 days on, 2 days off. Otherwise, you kind of blunt your pathways.
How about endocannabinoids?
Oh, they're really good. It's just legally challenging. They're very powerful. I'm not sure of their impact on mitochondrial pathways. I haven't studied them. But I know that they have a lot of profound benefits. Personally, I'm into regenerative agriculture. I have put in like 300,000-400,000 pounds of wood chips on my property in about a quarter acre, so it's pretty dense. And I've created this magnificent soil that I can grow stuff. And I had some other tweaks like foliar minerals that I use from the sea and some other ways of composting stuff that really just explodes growth. So, I mean, I wish I could grow some of that, but it's not legal where I live, so I'm definitely not going to engage in illegal activity.
No, but there you can obtain...
I would use it every day if I could.
Obtain non-psychoactive CBD oil.
The problem is they have to coming down on that pretty vigorously, and I don't think that's going to be available in the near future, even though there's no THC in it. It's still a problem.
Right, well, it's other interests.
I know, right? Yeah, it's legal now, but it probably won't be urgent.
Could you comment on the use of hyperbaric oxygen?
Yes, hyperbaric oxygen is an amazing strategy, primarily if you're treating cancer, because it's done in conjunction with the mitochondrial metabolic diet therapy and supplements. It works synergistically, so it's really useful. But would you like to know something I found that's less expensive, easier,
always,
and maybe even more effective?
Always.
Okay, you want to guess?
Earthing?
Okay. Nope, no. This is an oxidative therapy.
Okay.
It's called EWAT. Have you heard of EWAT?
Actually, I have, but I can't tell you how. EWAT.
Exercise with oxygen therapy.
Yes, EWAT.
Yeah, so that, and even the main researchers using hyperbaric and the mitochondrial therapy don't know this, so I have to connect with them, because I just learned of this recently. So, yeah, EWAT, I mean, the most expensive system is like $5,000. You get one for half the price, though. You can do it in your home every day for no charge.
I have actually been doing that for myself. I'm on the trampoline with oxygen.
Perfect.
And, yes, I know it.
Well, you want to consult with someone who understands how to implement this, because there's a lot of fine-tuning tweaks. And
okay.
I don't understand it well, because I actually just ordered one yesterday. But that's a powerful treatment, especially with cancer.
How about...
My guess is anything that improves cancer will improve the other conditions.
Yes.
Not 100%, but there's a strong likelihood. Because the research on this hasn't been done.
How about melatonin? Not for sleep, but to bathe the mitochondria.
Oh, yeah. Melatonin's great, but I would discourage use of a supplement. So that's, you know, you have to have a good sleep hygiene, which means you get to bed early, typically before 10. And if you're going to be up before that or after that, make sure you're wearing yellow glasses. You can get it for $7 on Amazon. They're like ski glasses, and they basically block out all the blue wavelengths, so they don't stimulate your pineal gland, which suppresses the production of melatonin after a certain time. So you want to optimize mitochondria, your own melatonin production. You want to really take it supplement. I mean, I've never taken it supplement because I'm sure I'm making massive quantities of it, because I pretty much and have bright exposure to the sun in the daytime, which I do pretty much every day. And it was a little cloudy today, so I didn't get a lot of good sun, but most of the time I get 2 hours of sun. So
awesome. Did we leave anything out?
Well, you were really good. I think you covered most of them. Yeah, the big ones. I mean,
oh, how about vitamin D?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, vitamin D. That's like in my Effortless Healing book. But it's an epigenetic regulator of about 3,000 pathways. So yeah, many of them are going to be mitochondrial. So that's why you want to. There's not that many tests you need. Your fasting blood glucose, ferritin level, and vitamin D. You got to do those tests. And it needs to be 40 to 60, which is about the same as the ferritin. So it's easy to remember.
Yes. Dr. Mercola, you have just been as usual, a wealth of information. And
I hope so. You got to benefit from my last 4 months of devouring the literature and implementing it myself personally. So hopefully it was helpful.
Well, we're going to share this with a lot of people out there. And
Is this primarily for the autism community?
No, not at all. Not really linked to the, I'm more linked to the Lyme community, but it will be for everybody.
Well, there is a prominent journalist, you may have heard of him, Tim Ferriss.
Yes.
Who wrote the 4-Hour Workweek. So a lot of people have heard of him. And he was actually crippled, disabled with Lyme for 9 months. I don't know if you knew that. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
He was. Do you know what resolved his Lyme disease? Now, this won't work for everyone, but it worked for Tim, though.
No, I don't know.
What I just described.
Uh-huh. So he had the benefit
of... thing that worked. No, I didn't act. He found it out independently because there was a lot of other people doing this, some of the researchers, so he connected with them directly. But no, it definitely works. It'll upregulate your immune system, no question about it. Now, it would have been better if he had seen some more sophisticated clinicians who could have diagnosed him energetically and given specific remedies for it that would have helped expedite his improvement. But, you know, the diet by itself worked for him, and it will for many people. But, you know, if you don't get better with it, don't give up, because it's clearly the foundational part of the treatment plan.
Wonderful. I think this has just been such awesome information for everybody. I hope they look for your new book. I hope they get all your books and follow you. You just are an inspiration for everybody, and your passion, your soul's purpose is just shining through and lighting up this world, and it's going to make a difference.
Yes, I am excited about that possibility and really convinced. It's almost as if, like, I've watched the movie. I know the ending. I know we win. I know the world's converted. I mean, I've never been so confident about any other project I've ever been on. I mean, the confidence is there, and the power, because I've never been so convinced of the value of any specific therapeutic intervention. I never treated cancer patients until recently. Now I feel I could almost treat any cancer patient. Not that I'm going to, but I understand how to treat it. Finally, after 35 years of clinical experience. Didn't know how before, because I didn't understand the cause.
Right. Well, it reminds me of a lot of the 21st century quantum energy work, where you have to see it, feel it, taste it, hear it, believe it, and it'll happen. And I think that's another part of your inspiration.
Oh, great. And, please, if anyone's interested, got to get the book when it comes out. And I'm working furiously to get it out. But I've only touched on a few of the highlights. There's a lot more details I don't have time to discuss in the book.
Well, thank you so much. I will certainly be on the lookout for it, as will our listeners. And God bless you and keep you safe and healthy and inspired.
All right. Well, very good.
Thank you so much.